it's yours. State Senator Brad Hawkins. Good morning, Senator.
Good morning, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for holding on there. I sure appreciate it. Well, we had it in the news today. It's coming up like a freight train, this long-term care package.
Yeah, no doubt. It's been something that in some ways was very well known some years ago, and then it has gone under the radar, and now it's about to be implemented. It's known as the Washington Cares Fund, and it was a bill that created a program. The bill was approved back in 2019 that aims to create a long-term care benefit, but it's a pretty modest amount total. It's $36,500 for a lifetime benefit, but it would implement a It does implement a payroll tax, the equivalent to $5.80 for every $1,000 earned. And that tax was delayed by the governor, and it was very unpopular, the program itself. So the governor did delay it, and the legislature officially postponed it for a couple years. But the whole program is scheduled to take effect in July here, so just in a matter of days.
Did you ever have the opportunity to have a conversation with those who supported this particular long-term care package and just do the math, the fact that the maximum benefit is $36,500, and according to AARP, monthly in-home care would be $3,600 a month, and if you had to go to some sort of a facility, it's $12,000 a month. How much long-term care? I mean, to even call it long-term care is an oxymoron. It's a few months' care at best.
Yeah, that's right. It's not accurate. It's the math that does not work. It's going to underperform. We have those of us who voted against it, and I was one who voted against it. We argued at the time that this program doesn't work, also that the private sector provides long-term care insurance. Many of the plans offered through the private sector are much better because they can be structured in different ways. They are also portable across state lines, whereas this Washington State program that essentially tries to duplicate what is already provided in the private sector is not portable across state lines. And the maximum benefit, if someone does need long-term care, isn't going to provide the long-term care. So I don't want to in any way diminish the importance of long-term care as an issue. It's a very important issue. It affects many families. Arguably, there's, you know, some things I believe that need to take place at the federal level with Medicaid and Medicare to really address the long-term care. But I just don't want people to mistakenly think that this program in Washington State is going to solve the issue, because it really doesn't. It was sponsored by Representative Lori Jenkins out of Tacoma in 2019, and it did pass. But she went on to become, after that, the Washington State Speaker of the House. And so she has not let the program go. We have urged the governor to terminate it. We've offered bills to repeal and replace it. There have been different bipartisan efforts to do that, but we have not been successful in the legislature. And the real issue, Jeff, is you have young people who are struggling to pay off their student loans, who are working hard to save for the purchase of their first house. And we know that housing, especially in the Chelan-Manson area, people can't really afford to live there if they're young people. So they're working hard to save up. And this is something that literally reaches into your wallet and extracts money out of your income. And people could be paying, someone who enters this system for in their early 20s could pay 40 years or more into this system and then may never need the long-term care, or eventually retire out of state and not have access to something they've paid into. So it's a major issue. And I know people say, well, you know, it should be portable and people should be able to be exempt and all these other things. But the reality is the way they structured the program is designed to get the tax revenue into their system. It's not really designed to make it as usable and workable for people. It's more designed to actually bring as much revenue in. They don't really want people taking their benefits across to other states. They want to keep the keep the revenues in our state. So it's just kind of by design, you know?
Yeah. Well, there you go. At this point, it is what it is. We'll just hope that our legislators can, at some point, make a change, I guess.
Well, and that's also what we're hoping, too. I mean, there's always an off chance that the governor could pause the program again, but we don't anticipate that happening, or else he probably would have done it by now. Mm-hmm. But the legislature does meet every year, and I don't think this issue is going to go away. There are options, some limited exemptions with people in the system if they've already purchased a long-term care plan through the private sector, and they did it by a certain date a couple years ago, and they've already applied for the exemption. Then
we've heard from Commissioner of Public Lands Hillary Franz, who sounds pretty confident about their preparedness for wildfire season. What are you hearing?
We've invested more in air resources, more in proactive forest management. The problem is, you know, there's only so many state lands. There are a lot of federal lands in our area. And frankly, I don't believe the U.S. Forest Service has done as good a job as the state. In fact, I know they haven't. And so we really need everyone, you know, all active partners. And I'm afraid that the U.S. Forest Service lands are very much at risk. And whether it's thunder or lightning and that could cause the wildfires, or many of the wildfires are caused by human actions. You know, we really need to do everything we can to hopefully put out the fire soon after they start, rather than just managing them once they get burning. And that's my hope. And then over time, we can continue to be proactive at clearing the underbrush, removing small diameter trees, and helping our forests naturally withstand some of the natural caused fires.
Mm-hmm. I know you and I haven't had a chance to discuss this, but we're hearing more and more about pay as you go as it relates to EVs and the state continuing to secure its fair share of revenue for vehicles on the road. How's that conversation progressing?
Well, if pay as you go means like pay per mile, that's definitely a conversation that some people have tried to advance, because there have been diminishing revenues from the gas tax, because more and more fuel efficient vehicles, more and more electric vehicles, but there's actually really just a relatively small number of electric vehicles now. I'd say between 2-4% of the overall drivers on the roadway, but that is anticipated to increase, especially if these gas prices continue to push up to be among the nation's highest gas prices. I guess, you know, I support electric vehicles, I support hydrogen vehicles, but I think it'd probably be, it's best to create incentives to do that rather than punishments.
Mm-hmm.
So that's more of the policy angle that I'd like to see. And I don't know what's ultimately going to change in terms of how we get revenues to maintain our roads, because the electric vehicles do pay certain fees, extra fees that aren't necessarily what gasoline vehicles pay. Right. And that's intended to offset the fact that they don't pay for gas tax. I know it's great that people who drive electric vehicles, it's potentially better for the environment, of course, but it still wears down the roads. So everybody who drives electric vehicle, in my opinion, still needs to help cover the cost of maintenance and preservation of the roadways. So it is a big issue, mm-hmm. and it's probably something on the Transportation Committee that we will continue to discuss.
All right. And maybe even on your listening tour coming up.
Yes, I have a listening tour. It's scheduled for September 5th through the 8th. I'll be spending a few of the days on the western portion of the district, because they don't know me quite as well, and a couple of days here. I look forward to it. It'll be my seventh annual listening tour. It sort of helps me get geared up for the upcoming session. I hear from people. They bring me their budget requests or different bill ideas or just feedback on state government. And then I have my staff there, and we kind of do a deep dive into their issues and then do follow-ups. And it kind of helps get me kind of in the frame of mind for the upcoming session, which is scheduled to begin in January of 2024. So since this session went longer, we're going to have a session right around the corner. And, you know, we're back at it again over in Olympia come next January.
It comes up fast, that's for sure.
Sure does.
Oh, boy.
Sure does.
Senator Brad Hawkins, thank you so much. We always appreciate you taking time out to get us up to speed on the doings, and I'm sure the conversations will continue.
Yeah, the conversations will continue, and we've had some good conversations from Chelan folks. I was up in Chelan just last week at the historic downtown Chelan Association. You got a beautiful community, and I look forward to being back there soon. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you, Senator. We appreciate the time. Again, Senator Brad Hawkins joining us this morning for a Community Connection.